శ్రీ దక్షిణామూర్తి అండ్ శ్రీ రమణ బై సాధు అరుణాచల మేజర్ ఏడబ్ల్యూ చాడ్విక్. భగవాన్ శ్రీ రమణ మహర్షి హ్యాస్ ఆఫన్ బీన్ కంపేర్డ్ టు శ్రీ దక్షిణామూర్తి హూ సిట్స్ సైలెంట్ అండ్ ద బానియన్ ట్రీ ఆన్ ది నార్త్ స్లోప్ ఆఫ్ అరుణాచల అండ్ దర్ ఈస్ మచ్ గ్రౌండ్ ఫర్ దిస్ కంపారిజన్. మోర్ ఓవర్ ఇట్ ఈస్ మోర్ దెన్ జస్ట్ ఎ కంపారిజన్. Actually, the two are identical. Although their bodies may to us bound by the limitations of time and space seem different. Sri Dakshinamurti has retreated to an inaccessible vastness no longer to be reached by humans, and we can only surmise that this is because he found the world unworthy and unable to understand his silent instruction. Whereas, in the form of Sri Ramana, he was always most accessible and explained to one and all the meaning of this silence. If they did not listen, well, the seed would bear fruit on some future occasion. Nothing was ever wasted. For him, there was no time, and so there could be no disappointment. Strangely enough, Bhagavan, as we all used to call Sri Ramana, once found himself in the proximity of silent Guru. He had gone off on a ramble about the slopes of the hill when he saw a very large banyan leaf lying in his path. So struck was he by this that he set off in search of the source. At length, he came within sight of an uncommonly large tree, which he thought must be the one for which he was looking. But he could not reach it. His way was blocked by a wall of sheer rock. At the same time, he was attacked by a swarm of wasps whose nest he had unwittingly disturbed. Thus, realizing that he was not intended to proceed, he returned. Ever after, he discouraged his disciples who proposed to explore this mystery from going in quest of the same spot. "You will not succeed in any way," he would tell them. And though occasionally some would ignore his advice, nobody ever did succeed in getting a glimpse of the enormous tree. Both Sri Dakshinamurti and Sri Ramana taught exactly the same teaching that can be fully expounded in silence. As soon as words are used, we are in the realm of the relative. And for Bhagavan, there was no relative. It was only a fictitious appearance on reality, which is one, Advaita. "Make an effort to be without effort," he would say. "In fact, don't do anything, because actually there is nothing to do. The whole trouble with us all is this constant doing. By associating ourselves with all sorts of actions and circumstances, we place apparent limitations on the illimitable. How can speech do more than point out to us our mistake? It can tell us only to be, not to be this or to be that, because being this or that is back again in the realm of limitation, and it is just exactly here that he is trying to make us understand that we are wrong. And is there really any method of reaching that which is eternally and forever here and now?" Yes, Sri Ramana taught self-inquiry. Find out who is this eternal and ever-conscious being that you really are by inquiry, "Who am I?" But that was all. In other words, just be yourself, and to be yourself, you must get behind phenomena to the eternal witness, and this can only be done by self-inquiry. However, sometimes Sri Bhagavan would expound philosophy by the hour to clear doubts on his many visitors. Yet, he always explained that this was actually quite unnecessary. There was only one thing to know and to do. Silence was best. Once, when he saw me puzzling over the intricate division and the recombination of the elements in an Advaitic treatise that he had told me to read, he turned to someone sitting before him and said, "Tell him not to worry over all that. That is for those people who demand that sort of thing, who want an analytical explanation of everything. Let him read the rest, which he can understand." Sri Ramana has stated explicitly that he himself never at any time did any sadhana. Sometimes I would sit with my eyes closed, and sometimes with them open I still do. But I know no mantra or yogi exercise, and would not have any use for them if I did. And it is certain that he never taught any of these things. He told us how to set about self-inquiry and advised certain rules of life that would facilitate this, but that was all. He says in the little book, "Who Am I?" regulation of diet, restricting it to sattvic food taken in moderate quantities, is of all rules of conduct the best and is most conducive to the development of sattvic qualities of the mind. These in their turn assist us in the practice of atmavichara, or inquiry in quest of the self. "For the mind is the product of the food we eat," he explained. "Purify the food and the mind automatically becomes pure again. Likes and dislikes, love and hatred are equally to be eschewed. Nor is it proper to let the mind rest often on the affairs of worldly life. As far as possible, one should not interfere in the affairs of others. Everything offered to others is really an offering to oneself. And if only this is realized, who is there that could refuse anything to others?" Let me quote once again. "If the ego rises, all else will arise. If it subsides, all else will also subside. The deeper the humility with which we conduct ourselves, the better for us. If only the mind is kept under control, what matters it where one may happen to be?" It all sounds so simple put like this, and yet how many of us succeed? No question here of going off and taking sannyasa, for as he says, renunciation is not discarding external things, but the cancellation of the uprising ego. And this can quite possibly be done more effectively in the world and in the midst of family life. For to the determined seeker, some opposition is good. It gives him something to work on and keeps him alert, just as the aeroplane needs the opposition of the air to hold it aloft. Bhagavan was always very definite in pointing out that liberation is not something far off, after-death experience. It is here and now for all of us always. Just drop the false association with limitation. Nothing new will happen, and we shall then see that we have been all along the self that we were searching for. Sri Ramana was so missionary, trying to drive people along a definite track. Did he not know far better than we that everything would come to fruition at its proper time? There was no forcing it. A certain number of people were bound to come to him, and a few were able to remain permanently. It was just their karma. Once, when a visitor was taking leave and with tears complained that he could not remain any longer, Bhagavan remarked in a very matter-of-fact way that if everybody who came remained, there would not be any room for anybody. For a person who believed in reforms and all sorts of charitable activity, his advice was, first help yourself and then you may be able to help others. How can you possibly do any good to others when you yourself are still only seeking for the good? Such activity amounts to starting out at the wrong end. People who never came to him have often said that his was a negative philosophy, but this is only ignorance of the truth. He was a dynamic force himself, and he never advised the inaction of inertia. Do, but do not associate yourself with the doer. Be the written witness always, was his message. Things will undoubtedly go on, and as long as we imagine ourselves to be the body, we will naturally believe that we perform its various activities ourselves. It is absolutely useless to sit back and say, I am not the body, so there is no need to do anything. This is only a catchphrase of intellectualism. We do not really believe it to be true, so it only reveals our hypocrisy. When we do actually know the truth, we shall never talk like that. For the real sannyasi who has said there is no difference between solitude and active life, as he does not regard himself as the doer in either case. Sri Ramana's message is for one and all, and so no one, whatever his occupation, need say that he has no time. For his teaching is to be practiced now and always, whatever we may be doing, whether working or resting, eating or sleeping. At the end of Catechism of Inquiry, Self-Inquiry, it is said, it is within our power to adopt a simple and nutritious diet and with earnest and incessant endeavor to eradicate the ego, the cause of all misery, by cancelling all mental activities born of the ego, that is, the idea, I am the doer. Can obsessing thought arise without the ego, and can there be illusion apart from such thought? And in these few words are summed up the whole of the teaching of the great sage of Arunachala, who was in fact none other than Sri Dakshinamurti in mortal form. And even now, though Sri Ramana has left his body, what is the difference? Does he not exist? Does he not exactly come up to the definition of Sri Dakshinamurti as given by Sri Sundararaja Sarma in his commentary on the slokas of Sri Sankaracharya? Sri Maya Shakti, Dakshin, perfect, Amruti, formless, or the ever-perfect invisible power, as one might term it. The first verse of the Dakshinamurti Stotra by Sri Sankaracharya declares the same. I bow to Sri Dakshinamurti in the form of my Guru. I bow to him by whose grace the whole world is found and exists entirely in the mind, like a city's image mirrored in a glass, though like a dream, through Maya's power, it appears outside, and by whose grace again, on the dawn of knowledge, it is perceived as the everlasting and non-dual self. But of a truth, the self is one. When we have reached that state of knowledge, when we live in the self alone and see the world from what it is, we too shall find that both Sri Dakshinamurti and Sri Ramana are and ever have been enthroned in our hearts. Let us pray earnestly that the dawn of that day may be near at hand.